Greece number 12 in A flat major. And that's about it for this edition of Sunday Morning. Thank you so much for your company. I do hope you enjoyed listening. Next week, my 20th Century String Quartet is by Béla Bartók, his fifth, played by the Vague Quartet. And Mitsuko Uchida plays Mozart's second piano sonata. My theme is devoted to what I'm calling narratives in miniature. And my featured singer is the wonderful soprano Irmgard Seyfried. So please do join me same time next Sunday morning, 9 o'clock.
Sunday Morning with Rob Cowan is a unique production for BBC Radio 3 with studio production this morning by Neil Miners.
A T.S. Eliot Words and Music Special here on BBC Radio 3.
Time present and time past are both perhaps present in time future.
Simon Russell Beale.
And time future contained in time past.
Poetry read by Simon Russell Beale to mark the 50th anniversary of T.S. Eliot's death.
What seas, what shores, what granite islands towards my timbers, and wood thrush calling through the fog. My daughter.
New for 2015, Simon Russell Beale on Words and Music. Today at 5:30 here on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3, where it's now 12 midday and time for Private Passions. Michael Barclay's guest today is the charity's CEO and cancer blogger, Kate Gross, who sadly died just 10 days ago at the age of 36.
Kate Gross was a quite unforgettable guest on Private Passions. So bright and charismatic, so full of life and curiosity about the world, despite being gravely ill when we met last autumn. And indeed, all through her life, she was the kind of person everybody seemed to envy, hugely successful in her career. By only 27, she'd risen so quickly up through the civil service that she was briefing Tony Blair before Prime Minister's questions. Then, by 29, she had left the civil service to set up Blair's African charity, the Africa Governance Initiative, managing an annual budget of £5 million. But then her life fell apart. On the plane back from America, she collapsed and went straight to hospital when she landed. It was then that she was diagnosed with stage 4 bowel cancer, a terminal diagnosis. This was how, in 2012, Kate Gross, the CEO, turned into Kate Gross, the cancer blogger. Her blog, which is soon to be a book, chronicled her life in and out of hospital over the last 2 years. It's deeply moving, but also sharp and funny. Sadly, she died before the book was published. But her family are more than happy for this programme to be broadcast. Kate knew it would be part of her memorial. We met in the bedroom of her house in Cambridge, up on the top floor with the sun streaming in. And I began by asking her why it was that she started writing her blog. Who, in fact, was she writing for?
I first started writing because it was a way to create something when everything else seemed to be falling apart. But I also write, have always written, because it's something I can leave for my children. I wrote the blog and I wrote the book for my boys, who are twins aged 5 at the moment. It's like leaving a treasure map, something that they can pick up later in life and understand more about their mum, more about the things that motivated her, and actually more about life and death. And I wrote because I want them to understand that death is, of course, sad, but not only sad, and some of the kind of joyous moments that we've had in the last 2 years since I've been diagnosed.
You've got twin boys who perhaps you regard as your greatest creation thus far.
Yes, they are my greatest creation, certainly.
Have you enjoyed putting the list of music together? And have you found that music has, to any degree, some sort of catharsis for you? Do you find in music some kind of release, some kind of peace?
Yes, I certainly do. I mean, I listen to music in the sort of dead watches of the night when I'm awake with the side effects of chemotherapy, and I find it calming rather than cathartic. I find it helps me find inside just a little bit of stillness when everything's sort of whirring around. And I think quite a lot of that I've chosen, certainly the latter choices, are about finding that stillness when things are very difficult.
It's very hard to believe what is happening to you because you appear to be very radiant in many ways. You know, it's hard to believe you've got this appalling condition. Do you find it hard to accept that it's there?
I don't think I find it hard to accept that it's there, but I do quite often wake up and think, really? Really? Hang on, is this really happening to me? But it's a balance because, you know, on the good days, I feel extremely energetic and brilliant, basically. And then on the bad days, I feel like, you know, I can't get out of bed and really I can quite understand that this is a terminal disease because I just want to stay in bed forever. Mm-hmm.
This piece that you've chosen, wonderful piece, and I think there's a very nice story behind the person who suggested that you should listen to this.
So this piece, I have a cousin who is blind and disabled, lives in France, and he has always shown me that an altered life, a life that is not quite what you expect, doesn't have to be a half life. It can be just as whole as everyone else's.
He's a great skier, isn't
he? He's a brilliant skier and a brilliant piano player. And he sent me this. He sent me a recording of him playing this for my birthday this year. And I listened to it to remind me of him and remind me of him jetting down the ski slopes.
This is Schubert. It's a slow movement. Mitsuko Ujida playing the slow movement of Schubert's Piano Sonata No. 21 in B-flat. Actually, that's an extraordinary piece in a way for you to choose, because it seems to me to almost have a kind of carrier sort of import to it. Do you know what I mean? That it has something about deep spirituality. Or maybe I'm just imagining that.
No, I don't think you're imagining it, and I don't think you can put your finger on quite why, but it's one of my pieces of calm. Words have always been my refuge, and I think I'm a very sort of practical kind of person, and I find in them concrete relief, whereas music is something, as you say, much more abstract, much more connected to just how you are. And finding that kind of peace and that quiet, even when you're not quite expecting it, it can bring it.
It would be lovely, if you wouldn't mind, if you would read just a little bit of your new book, Late Fragments. And this is rather apt because it sums up what we've just been talking about before the Schubert, the dealing with the before and after, if you like.
I originally wrote this as a blog called Time's Winged Chariot, and then I've put it in my book, Late Fragments. I struggle with time because I don't know how long this glorious final chapter will be. The seasons have a different meaning now. Spring passed by on hyperspeed. Red tulips destroyed by vigorous games of football. The pink clematis that every year marks the boy's birthday, gone in a flash. Purple alliums, followed by fat white peonies shedding their petals too fast. Every day I want to press pause and soak in each moment, but the next comes on too fast, and I am dazzled by it all. I want to press pause, not just because I'm petrified that I won't experience each of these moments again, though that I am, but because I want to suck the marrow out of what I see, to make myself experience the waxy petals as richly as if they were my own flesh. I wish I didn't feel the insistent whoosh of time's winged chariot behind me, but I do. And it makes me panic, not about dying, or not purely about dying. More, that I haven't appreciated the tulips, the clematis, the peonies, the alliums, the honeysuckle enough. And soon they will be over. And what if I didn't notice them properly while I had the chance?
It's that sort of intensity, that vibrancy of life, which I imagine is in fact intensified itself by finding oneself in this stage of an illness.
Yes, absolutely. And one of the reasons I wrote my book was to write about the wonder that I've experienced. And it's something that I think people have sort of moments throughout their life, but I have never felt so much wonder at life, at nature, at everything around me as I have since I was diagnosed. And that has been this sort of, if not a silver lining, then a strange upside to my disease.
I'm so struck by what you say and what you've just read, and it is something that is often said by people who don't necessarily have a long time to live. And it makes me wonder whether perhaps we shouldn't all try and sometimes kid ourselves if we're walking around a park, fool ourselves into thinking this could be my last day, which of course it could, might be a bus coming around the corner, and so that one actually experiences that incredible intensity of light and colour and beauty.
I absolutely agree, and it's partly why I wrote the book, because I wanted people to be sort of shocked out of their, you know, quotidian existence and just remember how magnificent life is, and to take a moment just to, you know, feel the petals on the flower and look around them.
You've chosen an African band next. Tell me about this.
The music of West Africa is very close to my heart. I've spent a lot of time in Liberia, Sierra Leone and Guinea, and I think Guinea has probably got the sort of the strongest musical tradition. And this band is made up of a series of redoubtable women who come from the Guinean security service and police forces, and have spent sort of 15 or 20 years just recording the most uplifting, joyous music.
Thank you.
So my feet just started tapping when I heard that, and I imagined women in fantastic West African outfits dancing along.
Sona, performed by Les Amazones de Guinée, an all-female band made up of officers from the Guinean army. Well, as we've gathered, you travelled widely in Africa, Kate Gross, when you were running your African charity, and in fact received an OBE for services to the public and charitable sectors.
Yeah, I've had some of my best musical moments in West Africa, just on the street in Freetown in Sierra Leone, listening to people singing or people kind of blaring out their kind of political movement songs. And actually in African churches, where you find that voices are the only instrument that people use, but they just make the most incredible and uplifting sounds. I've always felt myself to be a bit of a boring bureaucratic public servant. That is definitely what makes my heart beat faster, if that's possible. But I think when you work in the public sector in the UK, you can quite often feel very distant from the problems you're trying to solve, from what you're trying to do. And when I led the charity working in Africa, I never felt distant. I felt like I was very up close and personal with people's stories in a way that really connected to me. So you're right, you know, I'd sit in the back of our car and I'd listen to our driver, Albert, in Liberia, telling me about how his family had just about survived the Civil War, how all he wanted was to put his kids through school, but he didn't have the money to do it. That kind of proximity to real people's lives is something that I felt very privileged to have. And it has, drawing on that since I've been ill, has made me so profoundly grateful, because I wouldn't have even ended up on the first operating table. I would have died before I'd got there if I'd lived in most of the countries in the world. So you do come away from it with a real renewed appreciation for everything that we have here, and particularly the NHS.
We're going to hear the overture to one of the great operas now. And opera is quite a love of yours, isn't it?
Yes, I spent some time working in Brussels, and I had a very eclectic group of friends from across Europe, and they introduced me to opera when I was about 21 or 22. And I am very grateful for them for that, because it's something that I've carried with me that ever since. And opera is what I listen to when I'm working. So when I used to sit in Downing Street in a little basement office, sort of late at night, I would listen to opera because it would get my heart beating faster and make me work harder.
Well, many of us, Kate Gross, will be hugely encouraged to hear that opera resounds around the walls of Downing Street. Sir Colin Davis conducting the Staatskapelle Dresden in the overture to Mozart's The Magic Flute.
For the record, I should say that I had headphones on in Downing Street. I do wish that the music had been resounding around the whole building, but it wasn't, just in my office.
People started writing to you, didn't they, when you started the blog? Letters from children who lost parents, people praying for you, funny letters. And I wonder whether the sort of online conversation was a help to know that there were people in the same situation, or was it uplifting, or did it bring you down?
The most powerful letters I've had are from people who've faced enormous uncertainty in their own lives. So I've had letters from friends of mine all over the world, lots of people in Africa, people in the Middle East. And I think those sort of stories have put things in perspective for me and have made me realise really how lucky we are with what we've got here as a family. The other letters that I found particularly moving and helpful are those, as you say, from children who'd lost their parents, or from grown-ups now who lost their parents when they were children. And the fact that they are still such whole people, so able to love and be part of the world, has made me very, very hopeful for my own children and for their ability to be resilient and to remember me in a way which I hope they will.
You've given advice, haven't you, Kate, to people with friends who have cancer about what they should say and do. What would they be?
I think the first thing I would say is say something. It's very easy to imagine that whatever you say will be unwelcome, rude or trivial or something like that. But actually the most important thing for me has been knowing that people are willing to carry on talking to me, to treat me normally, to carry on living life with me, however long I've got. I think there's a whole lot of sort of advice on the kind of practical side, which I love to give. I think the most important thing is come in quietly, do the ironing, do the washing, unload the dishwasher. Don't expect any thanks for it. Same goes for when you write letters. Please, please put at the bottom, no need to reply, because the worst thing, the thing I hate most of all, is someone sending me a one-liner in a text or an email saying, how are you? Because then I feel obliged to reply, and actually, I don't, you know, it's pretty dull telling people how I am. It's not an interesting story. I want to hear their news, and then I want them to sign off breezily, so I feel no obligation to write back.
The next music is very much for your husband, who must have been through quite a difficult time dealing with all of this, because it often is as difficult for a partner.
This song from West Side Story is my soundtrack to my relationship with Billy. It's how I felt when I first met him, when we played a game of poker many years ago. And I think, I mean, he's had a horrible time. It's very hard to to lose that sort of reciprocity in a relationship. And it's hard for me to be the one who's cared for, and it's hard for him to be the carer. That's not what we should be doing. I'm 36. So is he. We should be having more arguments and not talking about the future of our children in such serious tones all the time.
And dealing with that, one of those worst feelings I think human beings can face, and you probably saw it sometimes in Africa, but it's helplessness. Mm. You can't do anything to change the course about the person you most love in the world.
No, but Billy's way forward with that, because he's a scientist, is to understand everything there is to know about cancer. And that's something I've been profoundly grateful for, because it means that I don't have to do that. So he's the one who's looked through the statistics for me, told me what I need to know, found out about clinical trials and all such things.
So both he, Billy, and your children will know exactly why this piece is so important.
I hope so, yes.
A would happen, I know now I was right.
For here you are, and what was just a word is a start. For me to live in, no better than a ride. But here you are, and what was just a word is a star tonight.
Good night.
Jimmy Bryant and Marnie Nixon as the singing voices of Maria and Tony in the original soundtrack to the 1961 film of Leonard Bernstein's West Side Story. And you can find details of all Kate Gross's music choices on the Private Passions page of the Radio 3 website. That has to be one of the greatest musicals ever written. The combination of the lyrics by Sondheim, the music by Bernstein, the choreography, and of course the Romeo and Juliet nature of the whole plot.
My mum took me to see a version of West Side Story when I was probably about 12 or 13, and I'd already read Romeo and Juliet, and I was just absolutely transfixed by the story and the words and the characters. And that song is, for me, one of the most perfect love songs there is.
In your book, you call cancer the nuisance. You often refer to the nuisance, which implies a way of making light of it. And so, obviously, people, when they read your book, will talk about courage. And I wonder how you react to that. Is it almost a burden to be told you're courageous?
It is a not a burden, but it is a bit tedious, actually, the kind of the language that people use around cancer. That, you know, you're so strong and you're so brave and I couldn't do it if I were you. Actually, of course you could do it if you were me. You'd react in the same way and you'd have the same sort of, you know, stoic approach to carrying on through treatment and chemotherapy and all the kind of the sort of the tediousness of cancer. I think the brain normalises. So it that's how it deals with trauma. What is for other people listening to this unthinkable is my normal. And so my normal is just what you do every day. And, you know, I go to hospital and I have chemotherapy and I try and treat it like going to work in a way. That's my job. That's what I have to do.
Poetry now. And this is one of the reasons I very much love your choices, Kate, because poetry is music at its greatest. And T.S. Eliot's four quartets are certainly amongst the greatest music ever written, in my view. What led to this choice and which would you like?
I'd like the section from Bert Norton about time. T.S. Eliot was a poet who I struggled with at university and I've only really found that I understand him now. And I think he writes about time and finding what I call the kind of point of calm, and he calls the sort of the point of fixity where the dance is, the moment of now. He writes about it in a way that I've never heard anyone else describe so perfectly.
At the still point of the turning world,
neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards. At the still point, there the dance is, but neither arrest nor movement. And do not call it fixity where past and future are gathered. Neither movement from nor towards, neither ascent nor decline. Except for the point, the still point, there would be no dance, and there is only the dance. I can only say there we have been, but I cannot say where, and I cannot say how long, for that is to place it in time. The inner freedom from the practical desire, the release from action and suffering, release from the inner and the outer compulsion, yet surrounded by a grace of sense, a white light still and moving, a herbung without motion, concentration without elimination, both a new world and the old made explicit, understood in the completion of its partial ecstasy, the resolution of its partial horror. Yet the enchainment of past and future, woven in the weakness of the changing body, protects mankind from heaven and damnation, which flesh cannot endure. Time past and time future allow but a little consciousness. To be conscious is not to be in time, but only in time can the moment in the rose garden, the moment in the arbour where the rain beat, the moment in the draughty church at Smokefall be remembered, involved with past and future. Only through time, time is conquered.
Ray Fiennes reading the second section of Burnt Norton, the first of T.S. Eliot's four quartets, profound poem about time and memory. I wonder whether it's particularly nice for you, Kate, to be making this programme, given that you are so keen to leave things for your children.
I have to say that is a wonderful motivation for making this programme. The idea of leaving little fragments of myself around in the digital ether that the boys will be able to come to at different points in their lives is exactly what I want to do. Although I hope that what I've got to say is useful for other people as well. Really, it's about me leaving something for them.
And it'll be nice for them to listen to you enjoying these pieces of music, which will now be, and especially in later life, I suspect, very important to them.
Yeah, I hope so.
You've been doing quite a lot of what you call advanced mothering, haven't you? Sort of thinking ahead about clothes, about holidays, all sorts of things.
I have. I've been sort of dealing with a lot of sort of practicalities, but also things that I think that they might want later in life. So as well as writing the book, I've been doing things like, you know, writing a manual for how the house works for Billy and the boys. I've been recording myself reading children's stories to them so that they've got most of the back catalogue of Narnia and Roald Dahl, because I read stories to them every night, and I think that's something that they'll really miss, and they'll be able to sit and listen to my voice.
Well, the next piece somewhat encapsulates this idea of what you can pass on as a mother, doesn't it?
Yes, this piece I listen to a lot when I'm feeling worried about what it is that I'm going to leave them and how they're going to be without me. Because I think even though they're so young, there will be so much of me that is still around in their lives forever. Whether it's in the music that I loved or the stories that I've read to them and loved myself, or the words that I've written about life and how I felt about it and the things that I think might come up for them.
Well, it's music by Dvorak, Songs My Mother Taught Me, sung by René Fleming, and begins, "Songs My Mother Taught Me in the days long vanished. Seldom from her eyelids were the teardrops banished. Now I teach my children each melodious measure. Off the tears are flowing, off they flow from my memory's treasure."
Thank you.
Songs My Mother Taught Me from Dvorak's cycle Gypsy Songs, gloriously sung by René Fleming and accompanied by the English Chamber Orchestra, conducted by Geoffrey Tate, who himself has overcome incredible disabilities to have a most wonderful career as a conductor. I suppose that music, Kate, forms part of that sort of hinterland which you've mentioned, where we must allow ourselves space, not if necessarily if we're ill, and maybe that's the lesson we should all take, to find time in our lives, our busy lives, for space to breathe, space to listen to music, to savour wonderful things. And of course, most of us don't do it enough.
Most of us don't do it enough, and I certainly didn't do it for a long time because I was too busy working and wiping small bottoms and answering emails. But I think if there is something that I've learned that I'd like to pass on, it is that you should tend your hinterland. You should spend time thinking about what it is that you loved as a child. What were the things, what were your passions? Music is certainly one of them for me, words, nature, and find space for those all the way through your life, even when you're busy with the sort of, you know, the humdrum of cooking and putting meals on the table and earning money and all that kind of thing.
We're going to end with a hymn, and I think you were baptised recently. So has an element of spirituality come into your life, or an additional element of spirituality, perhaps?
An additional element, yes. I was introduced to a lovely church by a friend of mine. It's called St Edward King and Martyr in Cambridge, and it's where the Reformation started. So it has a sort of, you know, a very intellectually interesting history for me. But basically, I find it a place where sort of free thinkers have always gathered and continue to gather. And it's a place where I find my little point of calm. And so it was somewhere that I felt immediately at home in a way that I hadn't with a lot of the established church before then.
This is a particularly beautiful hymn, I think. It's got a wonderful tune, and it takes you to a particular place, doesn't it?
This is the hymn that, again, I would reach for when things were really difficult. So I would sort of sing the melody to myself. I would repeat the words to myself when I'm feeling really bad, when I'm feeling really worried, because somehow the music allows you to connect with that piece of calm and, I guess, spirituality that I find when I go to church, when they're wafting the incense around and I'm at, you know, the meditative Eucharist service that I love so much. So this hymn will bring me back there in an instant.
Kate Gross, thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been an absolute pleasure and a real gift for me to do this.
Yeah. Stephen Clebury conducting the choir of King's College, Cambridge, in Dear Lord and Father of Mankind, the Repton hymn tune by Parry. The baritone soloist was Roland Roberts. Michael Barclay's guest was Kate Gross, who sadly died last month. The producer was Elizabeth Burke for Loftus. And you can download that programme and a good many more if you go to the Radio 3 podcasts page. Next week, Michael Barclay's guest is the businesswoman Emma Bridgewater. That's at midday next Sunday here on BBC Radio 3.
The A-List on In Tune.
How often do you let your hair down with Fats Waller and things like that?
You should be here, you know, like the people listening at home. I don't really have much hair.
We're going to do this rocking chair, which was made popular by Louis Armstrong here, because if it wasn't for Louis Armstrong, we'd all still be wearing powdered wigs.
Have you met, you two? He's the guy who put up the sales of oboes, you know, when he won BBC Young Musician of the Year. The sales of oboes shot up overnight.
How did you get that flame lit?
Oh, the music. It's simple. It all comes out of the music.
We got a little number out, first of all.
You don't know what it is.
No, I was looking, actually, at the BBC singers. I was about to say Nigel Kennedy plays Blow Away in the Morning Dew.
The A-List on In Tune.
Weekdays at 4:30 with me, Sean Rafferty.
And me, Susie Klein. Here on BBC Radio 3.
Well, back to this Sunday lunchtime. It's a minute to 1:30. The news now read by John Shea.
David Cameron has warned that Labour could plunge Britain into real poverty by failing to tackle the deficit if it wins the general election in May. Mr Cameron said there were 4 months to save the economic recovery. Labour has dismissed his remarks as desperate claims from a desperate Prime Minister. North Korea has described new sanctions imposed by the United States as a hostile act and said it would strengthen its military stance in response. President Obama imposed the measures on Friday, blaming Pyongyang for a cyber attack on Sony Pictures over its comedy about the North Korean leader. Prince Andrew is returning to Britain from a skiing holiday in Switzerland, following allegations by an American woman that she was forced to have sex with him when she was a teenager. Last night, Buckingham Palace issued a second statement strenuously denying the allegations. Maritime experts say it could take 2 days to refloat the large cargo ship that ran aground off the Isle of Wight last night. Lifeboats and a helicopter rescued all 25 members of the crew of the Hook Osaka after it hit a sandbar. Coast Guard teams searching for 8 crewmen from a freighter which capsized in the Pentland Firth near Orkney have found a small inflatable boat washed ashore on South Ronaldsay. There was no distress call before the Semfjord capsized yesterday. The crew are from Poland and the Philippines. 2 men have been charged with the murder of a builder in an attack outside a pub near Plymouth on New Year's Day. 27-year-old Tanis Bhandari died and 4 people were seriously injured in the assault, which is thought to have involved an axe. The Pope has continued efforts to reform the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church with the appointment of 20 new cardinals. Pope Francis said the cardinals came from 14 countries, including Ethiopia, Thailand and Tonga, and reflected the church's diversity. And the weather. It's a mostly dry day, although it'll feel cold where fog is slow to clear. It'll become cloudier across southern and western parts, with the best of the sunshine in the northeast. The news and weather on BBC Radio 3 at almost 1:04.
And it was read by John Shea. So, to the Radio 3 lunchtime concert, another chance to hear a Mozart concert from LSO St Luke's in London in the autumn of 2013. The players are London Winds and their director, clarinetist Michael Collins. And just 2 pieces in their concert, Mozart's C minor serenade. And first of all, here a London Winds lineup of oboe, clarinet, horn and bassoon, alongside the pianist Leon McCauley in the Mozart Piano Quintet. It's from 1784, a busy year for Mozart. 4 of his piano concertos were written in the first few months of the year. And along with those, in March, he produced this quintet, which he was so pleased with, he wrote home to his father, "I consider it the best work I've ever composed."